Welcome, everybody. I'm Giulia Caprese from the Floating Podcast. We are on a rocket halfway to Mars, and in today's episode, we're going to talk about energy supply on Mars and future prospects. Now, let's quickly remember that the first man who ever put foot on Mars was in 2027, and in 2040, the first settlement was formed. We're now in the year 2060, and we have seen huge developments, especially with regard to a growing population and energy switches. Because of this, we really need to step up our energy game, which is why today we have three very special guests here with us, who are going to tell us everything we need to know about energy on Mars. Let's welcome space technology experts Bob Rosenborg, Rosalie Clarenbeek, and Mohammed Wong. First, we are going to talk to Bob Rosenborg. He is a brilliant astronaut who was on the very first mission to Mars as the man in charge of the initial energy supply, given his specialization in solar energy. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Julia. It's great that you will have me here. It's been a long time since I've been on rocket, so it's nice. I missed it. Thank you.
We're happy to have you. So I think everyone is curious to know one thing. How did you power the settlement when you first arrived?
That's a question, man. It's been a long time ago, but we went with around 20 astronauts and scientists, and the first mission we took small nuclear batteries, they are called radioisotopic thermoelectric generators. It's the difficult word, but I'll save it. They are lightweight, compact power systems, and they were very handy in the beginning. But when we were there for a longer time, we needed something else. Yeah, so we switched to solar panels.
Ah, I see. Interesting. And why did you need to switch to solar?
Well, of course, the nuclear batteries can run out, and they did. But before that, we had to make sure we had another source of energy. And there was solar, because there's sunlight available. But there were a lot of struggles. And first of all, we needed a lot of equipment and materials from Earth. So there were a lot of missions from Earth, more people coming. And but in the end, we got our first solar park, you can say. And that was great.
Very interesting. And now, what was challenging about this way of power production?
I already talked about the challenges with the nuclear batteries that they ran out, but the solar energy, that was more challenging, because you need sunlight, and sunlight was only mostly available around the equator, so we had to make a settlement on the equator, and still the strength of the sunlight is much less than on Earth. The irradiance at Earth's equator is 1,000 watts per square meter, but on Mars it's just 590 watts per square meter. So that's a bit more than half. So we needed very efficient solar panels. And beside that, when it's dark, you have no sun. When it's winter, you have no sun. That's not a problem on the equator, but when you go further from the equator, that becomes a problem. And you need storage for that. So we needed batteries, and we needed to make hydrogen. But the biggest problems were the dust storms. Because of the dust storms, it could be dark for weeks. And then we had no power production by the solar panels. So we needed to store a lot of energy to provide when there were dust storms, so we could make water, make food, and all of those things. So there were a lot of challenges, of course. And besides that, we also needed materials and a lot of space travel between Earth and Mars. But we figured it out.
So now I'm wondering, what did you do during the dust storms? I mean, did you turn to another energy source?
Oh, those dust storms, man, They were so difficult. Like, it could be dark for weeks, you know, and we had to stay inside. And we had to be really community-minded. Like, we had to make sure we did not use too much energy, because in those times, and on Mars in general, access to the energy is a difference between life and death. We now know the importance of having energy during such a dust storm. So that's why we also, yeah, you asked about did you use other energy sources? So yeah, we did. We changed to nuclear.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
Now we are going to move to our nuclear energy expert, Rosalie Clarenbeek. She studied at Mars University in Paris and will give us some insights into the current energy supply on Mars. Welcome, Rosalie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Rosalie, how did the energy transition to nuclear go, and why do you think it was necessary?
Yeah, so at the beginning it was very hard because the solar energy only existed in shortage, and it was hard because sometimes you didn't have the energy. And that's why we needed a transition, and nuclear power was the easiest way to go, because nuclear power is actually quite easy to get to Mars because it doesn't need a lot of resources. However, it also brings some challenges because it's a very dangerous thing, like we experienced on Earth already. But it is a very reliable energy source. So the transition was actually quite challenging, and we had to be very careful. But once it worked, it was very reliable and nice, because we didn't have the energy shortages anymore, and that just made life a lot easier. We also had some breakthroughs in technology, so that's why it was easier to switch to nuclear power than it was before. And it also made it easier to develop and expand the city we already had, because there was more energy. And that's actually how we kind of got back to control. And it also showed the importance of keeping track of your energy and how much we used, so we could keep a better vision for the future.
So are these nuclear reactors similar to the ones that we use on Earth?
Well, they're actually a bit different because, of course, when bringing something to Mars, we need to make sure that it's very light and very small. So that was the essential thing that was necessary when it came to nuclear power on Mars. And NASA developed a project called Kilopower, and it's actually quite an old project now. But it developed it further and further, and now it only takes up to 5 of those nuclear reactors to maintain a city with power. So that's actually different than how nuclear power is produced on Earth, and it's also very innovative. However, the challenges are actually quite the same as the challenges we face on Earth. We still have nuclear waste, and as if right now we use robots to get rid of the nuclear waste and bring it somewhere else. But of course we don't know how bad those impacts could be in the future, in the long run. And there's also still the chance of nuclear disaster, just as there is on Earth.
Exactly. In fact, what do you think the societal impacts are? I mean, I imagine not everyone might be in favor of nuclear energy because of these challenges, right?
Yeah, you actually make a very good point. A lot of people that lived on Mars were very skeptical, of course, in the beginning. Because, yeah, remembering from Earth how dangerous it is, I understand that it might sound very dangerous, and you don't want that near your city. However, technology nowadays is actually very, very safe, and we didn't really have any other option, because we really needed a reliable energy source, and nuclear power at that time was really the only suitable option.
So would you say you fully rely on nuclear energy at the moment?
At the moment, nuclear power is actually a very important energy source. However, we still use solar panels. But for the long run, if Mars wants to be an independent settlement, it's very necessary to look into other energy sources, because the key elements of nuclear power, uranium and thorium, are both obtained on Earth and then shipped to Mars. And that's actually a very intense process. So if we really want to be an independent settlement, then we need to find another way.
Thank you, that was very insightful. And it is exactly this last point that brings us to the last guest of this podcast, Mohamed Wong. He is going to Mars for a PhD at Utrecht University, and he specializes in geothermal energy supply. He is currently undertaking a research project at his university. Welcome, Sir Wong.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Mr. Wong, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I studied in, actually did two bachelors. I studied in Delft, Applied Earth Sciences, and I also did a bachelor in Utrecht, in the beautiful city of Utrecht, called Global Sustainability Science. After which I proceeded to do Master's in Earth Sciences for Master Thesis in Geothermal Energy. And that's what brings me here today. Because for my PhD, I'm going to research whether it is feasible, whether it's possible to use geothermal energy on Mars on a very large scale to power a hypothetical city.
Ah, so tell us a little bit more about your PhD.
Yes, well, it's very exciting. So, because as you know, and as my colleagues have explained, Mars has been home to several different types of power sources, namely solar power and nuclear power, and it's already been explained why these two aren't enough to sustain the growing city on Mars. And what's really exciting is that I've been given the unique opportunity to enter the front lines of the cutting edge research and development into a possible future alternative energy source for Mars. And like I've said, mine is going to be geothermal energy. As of now, relatively little has been discovered about the actual application of geothermal energy on Mars. And that's because to know whether or whether we can't actually use geothermal energy, we need to do a lot more drilling and seismic mapping. Because as of now, we don't know enough about the top layer of the surface of top layer of the surface of Mars, and it's when we start actually drilling a bit more, we are able to tell a lot more about the situation on Mars. But there is evidence to suggests that there is a lot of potential for geothermal energy, which really excites me. And that's because of two things. The average heat on certain parts of Mars's surface is very high on certain parts, and on other parts, the heat loss is very anomalous, which suggests that there is geothermal activity present. And I can't wait to start digging in these locations to find out how much energy we could muster.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting, and you sound very excited yourself.
I am.
Now, do you think an entire city could be powered only by geothermal energy?
Yes, I think so. But the city we're headed to now probably can't be powered by geothermal energy, and that is because the sources of geothermal energy that we are targeting now are usually linked to recent volcanic activity, because they are the most promising locations on Mars where we will be able to harness that sort of energy. And as research now suggests that there isn't such a recent volcanic site near the city we're heading to now, this one probably can't be powered by geothermal energy. But if we would decide to build another settlement that will eventually become a city near such an old volcano, then chances are that we could actually power the entire city by geothermal energy. And that's because around such volcanoes there are usually a lot of geothermal wells, and these wells can produce up to a couple of megawatts of power per well. And if we would find a volcano which actually has quite some of these wells, then we could power quite some households with that. So, right now it's hard to say, but I'm quite positive that on the long run it'll be possible.
So would this be the last switch, or would this be the last final answer to the energy demand?
That's a very interesting question. I've actually been pondering that myself a lot lately as well. While it's not the purpose of my PhD, it is something that I've been thinking about, like, well, what if this PhD actually solves the Mars energy problem, which is quite unlikely. So right now, of course, it's really hard to say, it's really hard to answer that question because there's just too much unclear about the future. What I can say is that if my hypotheses are correct, then to a certain extent, certain cities will be able to independently live and supply themselves with geothermal energy. Only I would expect that at a certain point, other sources would also be needed as the settlement and as the human colonization of Mars keeps growing and growing.
Well, that sounds very interesting. Thank you for all that information, and I wish you good luck on your PhD.
Thank you very much.
Well, now that we have taken a look at both the past and present of energy on Mars, and since we are talking about its future, let's take a look at the difference between current energy practices and expectations we would like to make a reality. Let's hear what the specialists think and what other points they would like to make.
I think geothermal, if that would be possible, that would actually be very, very great solutions, because as I said before, there are multiple problems with nuclear energy. So if geothermal could work, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I agree, but I have quite some experience now, because I'm quite an old man. You might not say, but I am. And I want to add something to that, because it's really important to make sure you have multiple sources of energy, because when one source dies or there's a sandstorm for the solar panels or something like that, you never know. You need to be able to rely on another source. So I just wanted to add that. And by the way, I'm really inspired by your youth and your life, and your PhD is really interesting, and I would love to read more about it. And if you want, I can help you. I can show you around on the city of Mars.
Well, thank you very much. Well, of course, I'll need a tour guide through the city, and my PhD will take quite long. I think like 4 or 5 years. But when I'm done, I'll send you a link myself, and then we can discuss it in length. And hope that geothermal energy will be, at least for the foreseeable few decades, a really viable alternative.
Now, I would like to ask you all whether there would be another energy source that could be viable for a city on Mars.
Well, when I was a bit younger, we did a lot of tests and we tried a lot of different sources of energy. And one that was really interesting and we almost implemented it was wind energy. But on Mars, it's really difficult because they perform best at dust storms, which makes it, well, a good alternative to solar, because they perform bad at dust storms. However, the wind power is really low, so you need to have really big blades. And back in the days, we could not make that work.
Okay. I mean, if we could make them work, it would be a perfect complementary source of energy during dust storms. So then you have like the solar panels when it's sunny, and those like turbines or whatever during the storm. So I mean, it's something that I think would be really worth looking into.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point you're making, because I know of a few experts right now that are on Mars actually experimenting on wind energy, and that are now building these very big turbines there to see if that would actually be a viable solution. So that's actually something that's already being implemented or started.
The only thing I know about that is that also my research for like, because I have to do quite some transportation when I have to drive around Mars quite a lot for my PhD. The dust storms have really thin dust particles, a lot thinner than on Earth. So the turbines, I mean, I'm sure they know that, but I mean, the turbines have to be a lot better protected and a lot better isolated than, like, for example, the ones you have back home, because the storms are a lot more destructive than the ones we know. So that's also a thing that's really challenging. I think about that.
Yeah, that's why I actually think that back in the days it wasn't possible, but now because of a lot of technical innovations that it might actually be possible now.
I hope that's true, to be honest.
So what would you all think is the biggest reason for an increasing power use or power demand at this moment?
Well, I haven't been to Mars, so I mean, I'm going to leave this one to you two, and I'll, this is my first time, and you've both been there, so...
Yeah, so I think the biggest difference is for when I arrived was that there was actually already like an existing city or a settlement, and people were actually just improving their life there, so there were actually starts of recreation and sport, and I feel like back in the days that wasn't really there, but I mean, you should tell us about that.
Yeah, that sounds really different than how it was like for us. Because we, as the first explorers, we had to be really community-minded to survive and to thrive. And that meant to minimize also food and water and oxygen uses. Because the acquiring and replenishing of these resources required also energy. So it was really tough back then, and we had to make sure we used it really efficiently.
On Earth, you really had like all the resources, and you could really do whatever you want. And on Mars, we still really have to watch our energy use, and the energy balance is still very important. So it's not like life is easy and fun on Mars now, just as it was on Earth, but I do think that there is a big, big difference from when you first arrived.
But isn't it more also like... Isn't also like an achievement that life improved in such a fashion?
Yeah, of course. It was also my job, and it was really interesting. And of course, I'm very proud of what we have accomplished. If we look at the city now, it's so beautiful. It's so different than the first time I went there. It was totally empty, and right now there's just a lively city already. It's amazing. I'm proud. Yeah, I'm proud also.
So I think it's important to also ask, do you feel the current energy supply is safe enough to ensure a secure life for you and the future generation?
I think for me it will be fine. And actually, I believe that for the future and generations, it will also be fine, because we have now already so many more options to produce energy than we had back in the day. And life is so much easier now, so I think that will be fine. But I want to hear your opinions also, because you are our future generations.
Yeah, so me personally, I think that it's for sure good enough to ensure life, because I mean, we've been there and we've done that, and but I don't know if that's like the best life for someone.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and I guess I have to make my own judgment.
Well, thank you very much for enlightening us with your knowledge and for sharing it with us. It will be a few more months before we arrive, but we are definitely excited to get there. See you all at the next episode of the Floating Podcast.